Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Winners of the East London Challenge Cup soon after their formation in 1885. The old Millwall Rovers are now known to their roaring supporters as the Lads.
Ladies and gentlemen, broadcasting from beautiful South Bermondsey, this is Achtung Millwall. Oh, in the box, there's a little skip in.
Well, hello, good evening, welcome to this week's edition of Achtung Millwall. My name is, of course, Nick Hart. I'm sitting in the den on a warm and balmy Tuesday night. Sat next to Crazy Horse. Say hello to the listeners, Crazy Horse.
Hello, listeners.
He should neigh, really, shouldn't he? Here we are tonight for the Millwall versus Ipswich Town. Big game, they're all big this season, but this one's big. We're 1 point out of possible six in the opening two fixtures. Everyone on walking down Verney Road saying that we need a win tonight, and I make them right. So tonight's team news for you, dear listeners. Joel Nasser in goal, across the back line, McLaughlin, Meredith, Byron Webster, Sean Hutchinson in the midfield, Sean Williams, Phil Saville. On the wings, Jed Wallace and Aidan O'Brien. Bit of mind games there from Neil Harris tonight. Aidan O'Brien was reputedly not taking part in tonight's proceedings, but he is in real life. Up front, the dynamic duo, Lee Gregory, Steve Morrison. Now we're just going to do a little check-in for tonight's show. I'm going to come back again later. A Leonardo DiCaprio Da Vinci sketch of tonight's game. We're going to check in 22 minutes, half-time, 67, and full-time for you. You know the score by now, so we'll be back as the teams come on the pitch anyway. Then we'll report in during the course of tonight's proceedings. Here come the teams. Ipswich in black and red tonight, lines in their familiar blue and white. Mr. Piper now replacement. Noting some disparaging comment online. Shocking. Being one word from Harry. The road is a bit biased against him, but yeah. Volume very loud. No need for it, Mr. Piper now. Sunny night, fluffy clouds, late evening sunshine, floodlights are on. Then at the moment, it's probably about half full, I suppose. Good away turnout, Ipswich End, most of Rick Walters at the away end. I mean, many lines are still feeding into the ground. Just a quick word of praise for the match day programme, just looking over Neil's shoulder there. A really nice insert, 1986, fixture versus Ipswich, reproduction of the programme in there. Really nice work, Mark Litchfield, I know you're listening. Good work, Mark. Keep it going, mate. The match day programme is a lot better. So Lions kick this off, attacking the Ipswich end in the first half. Ipswich decked out like Manchester United. Red shirts and black chalks tonight. So we're going to check in later on in the half and we'll see how things are shaping up.
Ipswich shaping up very fucking well. Thank you very much. Oh, he's 6 seconds on the clock. Ball in the box, slammed home from close. Who got that one? No, who scored?
I have no idea.
I have no idea who scored. Have a look at it again. Little chip in the box from the left side by Aidan O'Brien. It falls to Jed Wallace, I think, who slammed it home on the volley. Nicely done. He's having a chance to buy for now's replacement. Jed Wallace. under Millwall.
Missed by the first minute in years.
No, 46 seconds to be precise. Cracking start by the Lions. Monkey off our back, let's hope so. 3 minutes gone, Ipswich have equalised. A dipping shot from distance, it beats Jordan Archer in goal. I want to see it again. The ball seemed to swerve mid-flight. So they beat him on the inside almost. The most odd goal. Let's watch it again on the replay. It's one each. All move breaks down midfield. There's a shot from... It looks like he took a deflection. He got a touch on it. A Jordan Archer moment. I don't know. One each. 3-4 minutes on the clock. Yeah, you got to put that down to Williams' bad ball out of defence, though. I mean, OK, Jordan Archer may well have been at fault there. I don't know. I would have to see it on YouTube, but there was the move broke down earlier than that. The poor pass out of defence by Sean Williams. So that one is on him, in my opinion. Coming for the halfway point in the first half. Open game, entertaining game. Mill had a couple of good chances about 10 minutes ago. Slap shot from Aidan O'Brien went wide. Lee Gregg released almost down the middle, but pulled up by the referee. Ipswich remain a dangerous threat. A couple of sloppy passes out of midfield by Sean Williams, so obviously the one for the goal. Again, that move, and also a moment ago, almost released him again on the break. But 1-1 at the halfway point in the first half. Open game. Anyone's to go and win yet. 3 minutes, 2-1 at Ipswich. Another error from midfield. Saville this time, unfortunately, giving the game away. Ipswich break forwards, ball in the middle from the left-hand side, slotted home from close, 2-1 Ipswich. Two errors have cost us, two goals, two errors. Can't do it at this level, and we keep doing it. 2-1 Ipswich. 34 minutes.
Goal! 35 minutes! Ball passed under the bar! Slammed home by Aidan O'Brien! 36 minutes! Lions dry level goal! End-to-end stuff here, I'll tell you that much!
Let's watch it again on the replay! Around, slammed against the bar by Saville, over a kick by Brian, under his underbody as he plowed to the wall. Well, I'll tell you what, it's been an entertaining game, Mill. Aidan O'Brien, who weren't going to play tonight. Mill Harris's mind games. May 37 minutes, it's just passed the ball straight across our goal on the next attack. It is open stuff, I'll tell you that much. Four goals in the half. Every time Ipswich coming forward at the moment, they're looking dangerous. Every time the Lions go forward, we're looking dangerous. Jesus Christ, at the stroke of half-time, 3-2 to Ipswich. Another error from midfield. Aidan O'Brien, this time, releases the ball. They break forwards. The ball's passed across our penalty area. Looked like it went out for a corner. Slotted in from close range again. 3-2. Three errors, three goals. Can't do it at this level, dear listeners. Very frustrating having brought ourselves back into the game. But that said, we've looked open, we've looked bright going forward, so there's every reason to think that more goals can follow in the second half. We do need to cut out these mistakes, releasing balls in midfield that give Ipswich the chance to break. They're good at it. There's half-time, 3-2 to Ipswich. I think I just said it all, really. The Lions were going feeling very hard done by, but that said... We've given them goals, whereas we've carved out our own goals from our own efforts. I think it's probably the best way to put it. Wobbly performances in goal for me tonight for Jordan Archer so far. Midfield have each played their part in each of the three Ipswich goals. Just want to mention some fantastic physical work up front by Lee Gregory as well in that half. So there is the break. Mill 2, Ipswich 3. A few half-time tweets for you. This is Harry, Block 45 Lion, says to me, CBL Magazine, I'm glad I called Archer's diminishing worth last Saturday. Andy Cole, not the Andy Cole, another Andy Cole, says, oh, for fuck's sake, Millwall. You know what you mean, Andy. Oliver Weiss says, I knew that would happen, that last-minute goal there. John Kelly posts, that just must be just before the goals got in, that an Ipswich journalist was saying Millwall were bullying them. I think that it has been a battle in midfield. It's been scrappy on occasions, but we've certainly taken the game to them, which is why it's so frustrating to have conceded. So, so many unnecessary goals, three unnecessary goals so far tonight. John Shippers, referring to Jordan Archer, says he's no better on a Tuesday night to when he comes on a Saturday. First midweek game in a while for John Shippers. Complete crisis of confidence, he says, for Jordan Archer. Got a goal. Neil's got it on his phone here. It's a shot.
deflection and it goes off of Archer's flapping hands. Bianca fucking Westfield, just to cap it off there. You've got to put it down to Jordan Archer there. He had a hand on it, so there it is. One from Omar Renain here. Three mistakes, three fucking goals. Succinctly put Omar. Both teams out for the second half. No changes so far as I can see. Lions will be attacking the Coldblow Lane in second half. And away we go. Cover 60 minutes, still 3-2 to Ipswich. Succession of middle corners in the last few minutes. Chance a few moments ago for Aidan O'Brien. Shot from the left-hand side, dipping, palm around by the goalkeeper. He'll stay with his corner, why not? He'll stay with it. It's dipped in into the middle. Across everybody. Chance for a shot from distance. That's over the bar there from Morrison. Another corner. We'll be looking for a time for change soon, though. It's starting to look a little bit predictable and a little bit flat, so fully expect to see substitutions of some sort. Not sure who. Probably Ferguson on the wing, perhaps O'Brien. He's actually not done too badly for me tonight, but that's probably the obvious move. I'd like to see Tom Elliott, see what he can do up front, get in the mix. Get back to bullying them. 67 minutes, still 3-2 Ipswich. We're getting closed out of this game a little bit, dear listeners. Getting a little bit out thoughts here. Not much for the crowd to cheer at the moment, and it's looking a little bit stale. So, as I said a few moments ago, time for a change, in my opinion. There's a break, though. There's Jeb Wallace down the right-hand side. He's straight into the first defender. Ball falls now to Saville. George Saville! Oh, it's a skidding shot. The goalkeeper just got enough on it to stop it on the line. Would you believe it? 67 minutes. It was Archer's move of a fraction of a second more than the goalkeeper. Going the wrong way, but managed to put a hand on it and stop it on the line there. Very unlucky to George Saville. 73 minutes. It looks like it might be a triple substitution coming on here. There's Elliot down there. There's Ronja Dinmar. And I think I saw Ferguson. So three-way substitution, we believe. Who's coming out? Meredith's coming out. The other two are going to remain on the side for the moment. Elliot coming in for Morrison up front. Very good run, of course. Probably the right move. He's just starting to get a little bit overpowered. He's put a lot into the game, Morrison. And Fred's coming in. Aidan O'Brien. Last 15 minutes. Crossing from the right from Jeb Boyce, free kick. Tom Elliott slams it in close. 3-8. Old school Wimbledon goal. Scruffy, ugly. Here it comes. Right hand side, but Jeb Boyce around. Elliott puts himself physically online, slams open close. 3-0. The new Fascino. Can the Lions press on and win it now? 10 minutes to go. Ben's blood is up. Club top scorer now, Tom Elliott, and crazy awesome, have seen them all. One way or the other. Elliott just been booked there for manhandling his opponent to concede the free kick, but it was one they had to take for the team, I think. The 18 standing over it, 87 minutes showing. In it comes. Angledon. 4-3 from close range. You could feel that coming. Yeah, I'll give you another mistake. I'll give you another error for another goal. And Archer, fuck off. I don't think you blame Jordan Archer for that goal. That was an angled ball where he was defensively not dealt with. I don't think he had much chance with a header. Referee reporting something down there to the fourth official. I don't know what. Something thrown over there. I don't know. Long conversation on the sidelines. I'm not sure what that was all about. Very frustrating night's football, dear listeners. We've clawed our way back into it three times and conceded mistakes and errors on four occasions to give the game away effectively. We can't do that at this level. Huge ball launched forward late in the game there, bouncing around at the end there. That's going to go for a corner, is it? No, it's clear. We're at too high a level to make errors like that. You can do it in League One, can't do it in the Championship, I'm afraid. On the positive side, we've looked bright going forwards. We've created chances, and certainly the arrival of Tom Elliott late in the game is also another element that is final whistle
Mill 3, Ipswich 4, Tom Elliott, I thought, brought a little bit of fire into the mix, but there it is, frustrating evenings at football.
Achtung, Millwall.
Some post-match tweets for you, dear listeners. Ganja Steps for Rhys Mogg says we must learn quickly from the salutary lesson of that first half. Three mistakes, three goals. You don't get that in League One. I make you right, Ganja Step. Three, you know, giveaway goals, really. And you cannot do that at this level. That much is true. Bermondsey Boy says we're only three games into the season and asks for time for Archer. He says Archer deserves more time. I once went five games into the season before dumping an ex-girlfriend, he says. You wag, Bermondsey Boy, you wag. Steve Evans says we're learning rather quickly just how unforgiving this league is. Sleeves up, lads. It's going to be a long season. Think you're right there, Stevie. Omar O'Neill, biggest injustice will be if Elliott doesn't start on Saturday at Bristol. The geezer can pluck a ball down under pressure every single time. Top play gave everything that last 13 minutes and made a difference. I do agree with you, Omar. Paul Regan says, sorry, but King, Cooper and Elliott have to start next week. May upset a few, but Gregory says Paul is League One. Don't agree with you there, Paul. I thought he did well tonight, put a lot in and made a lot of decent runs. But Jordan Archer, Paul's going to send him to Welling. Or that cunt's got to go to Welling, as Paul puts it. Speaking to John Kelly, Neil Harris says it was an unacceptable performance. We've given them four goals. I think you're right there, Neil. We have given them four goals. We've done well to get three goals, in my opinion, but you can't go away giving away four. And then he goes on. Neil Harris says it was a horrendous effort by the goalkeeper. But we gave the ball away cheaply. I presume he means for the opening goal with that. Harsh words there from Neil Harris. And finally, the man in block 11. We always need a bit of man of block 11's qualities here. He says, just a quick reminder for people who are hitting the panic button, the Millwall panic button, very special type of panic button that is. It's only August the 15th, so three games in. Make you right, man in block 11. I think we've played well. We can't keep on being unlucky and losing. More ruthlessness is required, but you're right, we've done enough going forwards to make us at least give some kind of hope that we can hold our own in this division. So we're going to close out that tonight's coverage of the Ipswich game, Mill 3, Ipswich 4, and after these messages, we'll be back at Bristol, Ashton Gate.
Achtung, Millwall.
So welcome back after the break, dear listeners. Welcome to, at the moment, a very quiet Ashton Gate, Bristol. Beautiful cloudy skies, but bright day, warmish day now. It was a bit chilly earlier on for the visit of the Lions to Bristol City. Big stadium, big stand on the right-hand side. We're in the away end, at Yeo End, I think it's called. But the right-hand side is a huge stand called the Lansdowne End. Kind of like a wraparound home end and side stand. This one seems to stand alone, the away end. But no, nice stadium. Today's team news, bizarrely for some, unsurprisingly for others, that Jordan Archer retains his place in goal. In fact, his unchanged side from Tuesday night's 3-4 defeat at home to Ipswich. Some might say that's Harris showing faith with his players, and there's an argument for that. Others will be saying it's the definition of madness by Albert Einstein, which is, of course, to repeat the same action over and over again, expecting a different outcome. That may be harsh on Jordan Archer. I actually do rate as a top-level goalkeeper. He's had a crisis of confidence lately, made mistakes and errors that led to goals on Tuesday night, as indeed did the team, the midfield predominantly. So whether he's entirely to blame for that, I don't know. I'll leave you to be the judge of it. As ever in football, ever, there's a chance to put right the multitude of shots. Was it 20-odd shots we had on Tuesday night? Only three of which went into the net. I did read a stat online that the Lions have got the highest number of shots in the league, in the division. Much good that is if you're not winning games. Ipswich, by contrast, had four shots on target and four goals on Tuesday night, all of which were gifts one way or the other. Very frustrating night, as you have just heard. Now, some will say every game's tough in this Championship, this Premier League light, and so it is true. Feels like a tough game today, though, dear listeners. Millwall obviously coming in with 1 point out of a possible nine, really desperate for a victory, and this is a hard place to come to try and gain said victory. But as I say in baseball, this is the big leagues, baby, and this is what we've got to contend with. Tom Elliott warming up in front of me. I'm sat behind the goal in Ashton Gate. Tom Elliott warming up with Fred in front of him. He felt particularly hard done by not starting today. In all honesty, I thought he did enough on Tuesday night. He made a difference when he did come into the game. I described it in a moment of frenzy as the new fashion. He certainly does have that physicality, that strength on the ball. And he looks like he knows where the goal is, so he will feel himself unlucky. I suppose he's got to get ahead of Steve Morrison, which is always going to be a big ask. But he will feel himself to be hard done by, dear listeners. I'm sure you agree. Strangely, I was just listening in the car to an audiobook on the D-Day landings, and there's a quote in there from General George S. Patton, the great American general of the Second World War, who had thought disparagingly somewhat of Eisenhower, who, for him, tried too hard to make friends with the men. Patton took the view that he did not try and make friends with the men. You took command of them, which did not necessarily include friendship. I wonder how Neil Harris is coping with that Patton principle. It's obviously we can't carry on as we are, dominating games, pounding shots in, winning the highest shot in the division league, for which there is absolutely no prize whatsoever. At some point, changes will have to come. So let's see how today's proceedings unfold. Much hilarity has just ensued. A long shot from the halfway line towards goal by Tom Elliott in the warm-up, just hit one of the stewards, bang on the head. I don't know if it was a follower of Jai Rastafari, but he's got that kind of haircut. Hit him right on the head when he was least expecting. It must have come as a shock, but everyone's laughing at you, which can't help your cause any, can it? It's discomforting. It's undignified. It's undignified, dear listeners. It was really online. Some 1,200 tickets sold for the travelling support up here in Bristol, or down here, sideways here in Bristol. Here today, so that's another good turnout for the Lions. Now, we're not going to do our usual stream of consciousness coverage. We're going to check in little sketches, little cameos, no less, during the course of today's game. So apologies if you like my waffling, or if you don't, but you'll get a little bit of it one way or the other. But we're going to check in at kickoff and at various points during the course of the game in the aftermath of the action. So I hope that's okay with you. If not, it's a full money-back guarantee. Just apply to the address given at the end of this podcast and get a complete and utter refund of everything you've spent on the show. Be back later on, dear listeners.
Achtung, Mehlball.
When they come, the two teams, I've got to say it's rather a flat atmosphere from the Bristol sides. Not from the Millwall end, however. 1,200 Millwall are worth 20,000 of Bristol. Here come the two teams. Lions decked out in white and blue, white shirts, blue shorts. Bristol in their red and white tradition. Lions unchanged from Tuesday night, so it's going to be Archer in goal. Plus the back line, you have Webster, Hutchinson, either side McLaughlin and Meredith. Midfield will be Savile Williams, Jed Wallace, Ferguson on the wing. Up front, Gregory and Morrison. Sorry, Scrub, Ferguson, Aidan O'Brien. Excuse me, I'm unprepared. High levels of professionalism in this show, as you would expect, dear listeners. Beautiful sunny day, pitch looks like a billiard table out there. Fantastic stadium. All set for a good afternoon's football. Hopefully we can get a result. So there we go, Lions going to be attacking the Bristol home end in the first half. Not sure what it ends for. The side stand, Lansdowne stand, big one, is about half full, I would say. Home end looks reasonably full, just short of a full answer. And the same on the side home stand, probably about three quarters full there, so I'm not sure what size crowd. It's a 27,000 seat stadium and 1,200 Millwall here, of course. So probably 20,000 plus, I'd say. Crossing, that's going to go for a corner. Quiet start for the Lions to begin. Trying to think the last time I saw a quick goal like that on Tuesday. Can't think of it off the top of my head. 40 seconds. It's certainly straight up and at them here today, dear listeners. At a man. That's a cartoon for you younger listeners from out of the Ark. Noah's Ark was showing at a man. Fantastic tackle by McLaughlin on 16 and a half minutes there, preventing a break on the left side as Bristol attacks. Gone for a Bristol City corner. Great tackle there. 18 minutes gone. Lions maintaining their direct style into what I believe are called the channels in football parlance. Good support from the travelling away fans. Ball into the mix, that's hoofed clear by the Bristol defence. Halfway through the first half, 22 minutes. long throw in, I'll just stay with this. A little back heel by Morrison, it's bounced and cleared. Huge clearance there. Story of the season, a lot of pressure, a lot of shots. Nothing focused, nothing on target. A lot of mill pressure, but when Bristol have come forwards, they've given you the edge of panic.
22 minutes. Ball breaks now for Morrison, just outside the Bristol penalty area. He makes a run into the box, so he's going to get cut out by a defender. Little moment there, little moment of ball break down, fault fell to Morrison. He probably didn't have enough space and was closed out quite rapidly by the Bristol defenders. 26 and a half minutes. Great attacking run by Jed Wallace. Come up towards the 40th minute, down the right-hand side, wins a corner. Beautiful run, cross into the mix. Put behind for a corner by the Bristol City defence. Another chance for the Lions to get the ball into the middle. It's going to be floated, I think that's Williams taking it into the mix. From under the bar there, looks like it's been put behind for another corner. This one on the left. The 43rd minute. 42 and a half, to be precise. A lot of passing around from Bristol. The usual story. When the Lions get it, we're direct and straight out at them. They like to pass the ball around the middle and work their space and their chances. That's gone all the way back to defence. Lions have dealt with it pretty well in this half, overall. But as ever, we've had shot upon shot, corner upon corner, with no end result for us. And you can see how these games get away from us at times. Ball into the box there. Relieved by the Mill defence. 43 minutes now. This is Morrison on the right-hand side. The ball's into the box early. Gregory was in there. Couldn't quite get on the end of it. So it's gone for a corner. Under attention from the Bristol defender, clearly. So yet another left-sided corner. I don't know what the statistics are, dear listeners. By the time you hear this, you'll have had to look it up on the BBC website. But we seem to have had a huge amount of corners and a huge amount of off-target shots in this 43 and a half minutes. So in from the left now, from Williams. That's across the face of the goal. Another corner, Millwall. Right-hand side corner. Going up for 44 minutes now. Be a fantastic time to make all this pressure pay just on the stroke of half-time. Can we do it? Need a pair of binoculars. Far, far away. I'm sitting fairly low down behind the goal. Anyway, it's floated into the middle near post. That's cleared easily enough. Here come Bristol. Nice work by McLaughlin again. Free kick. The nine takes a shot on goal, puts it wide. McLaughlin's done very well for me this half. My man of the half, Conor McLaughlin. A little bit of pushing and shoving out there. Hutchinson's working it. Or it was. Wallace is working it, making it. He's been smacked in the mouth. Let's see what we're going to do here. Hands were raised. Grab on him off. Morrison getting involved in a bit of a push and shove over there now. Referee's not shaping up to send him off. He's having a word with him at some length. He don't want to send him off. He's going to give him a yellow. To the displeasure of the Millwall crowd. As you can hear. Bottle job. The incident itself was minor. Hands were certainly raised. Was it Wallace? I couldn't tell you. Was making as if he'd been hit in the mouth. I don't think he was. Which is not something I approve of, trying to draw fellow professionals into trouble. I mean, it's the referee's job, it's not what I want to see. Certainly not from Millwall player. So I disapprove of that. In the end, the referee probably dealt with it correctly with a yellow, though those around me won't agree with that. Now we're into injury time, can't tell you how much injury time we got because I didn't hear an announcement in all that kerfuffle. Lions got to stay switched on here. We don't want to be conceding this close to half-time. Ball breaks. Bristol down the left-hand side. Across the face of the box. The nine was inches from putting that in front of us. In front of the Millwall fans, he was inches from sticking that in the net as the ball raced across our six-yard box. We catch a break. We dodge a bullet. That's what the Lions fans think of him. He was actually very, very close to sticking the Bristol City 1-0 up there, dear listeners. Probably the closest chance for either side of the half, despite an endless amount of pressure from us. We've not really carved out anything clear cut. There's the half-time breaks, 0-0. Story of the half is the story of the season so far. A lot of Lions pressure, no end results. How many times you heard that?
Achtung, Mehlball.
Team's back out for the second half. Lions will be attacking ourselves in the away end, the John at Yo end. No changes, so far as I can tell so far, anyway. So it'll be the team that finished the first half. We do need to start connecting some of these chances. We do need to start executing some of these moves and making this pressure count. How long will Harris give it before we see the introduction of Tom Elliott, Fred Onyedimma? I'd probably only give it about 10, 15 minutes or so. Well, Bristol kick us off attacking the far home end. Early move for Bristol, shot on goal from distance. That's palmed round the left-hand post. Shot outside the edge of the penalty area from the 14. Norwich just losing out midfield slightly. We're not pressing quite as much with as much urgency in the start of the second half. This is Bristol now come down the left side. That's going to be another corner for Bristol City. We need to raise our game slightly. If we're our best in it with this style, it's energetic across the midfield. And we just seem to have started the second half a little bit of a lull. Anyway, it's going to be a corner on the left-hand side as we look from this middle end. Lumped into the middle, taken by Joel Narcher, comfortably enough. And fantastic physical work by Lee Gregory in the halfway line, drawing a free kick. What he may lack in terms of execution in front of goal this season so far, at least, he's more than made up for in the work rate that he puts in. I know he's not there for work rate. I know he's there to score goals. I can only tell it like I see it, dear listeners. Gregory now in front of goal. Can he get a chance? Runs wide. Saville's shot falls to Gregory. Wallace. Gregory. Oh! Bobbling around in front of goal. Best opportunity for the Lions in the half. No clear shot on goal, but a number of opportunities to get something on the end of it. It's close, close, close. Pushed on a break forwards here. Little foray. She's at the crossbar from distance. Ball still bouncing around the far end. We've got the three, but on a little dribbly run. Got a shot in of sorts and hit the crossbar. Hard to tell you much more from the distance that I'm at, dear listeners. It didn't go in, that's all you need to know. 73 minutes looms. Ball breaks down midfield from Millwall. Wallace coming down the right-hand side now. Morrison's free, being fined him. Cut inside the penalty area. Wasteful by Wallace. And the move breaks down. Waste of a chance there. Waste of a chance. 73 minutes. Well, I think the crowd are going to get their wish. 2 minute now stripped off on the sidelines. So it's going to come in. I would imagine Morrison. I would imagine. Gregory's coming out. 1-2. This is Elliott. Coming down the left. Into the box. Going across the box. Just behind the oncoming Wallace. Wallace is leaving the game. Who's just coming in? Ferguson's coming in. So he's coming in to take the free kick. 81 minutes on the scoreboard. It's dinked in. Far post. Oh, off the line there from Elliott. Far post. The six has gone down and stayed down. As ever, you're going to hit him, hurt him. And you know him by the stream of bodies in his wake. Since Elliott's come into the game now, 87 minutes, only 3 minutes to the game to go. But we just seem to introduce an element. There's a shot from distance from Elliott. That's Miles once, almost hit the corner flag on the volley. But he's introduced an element of uncertainty into the Bristol defence now. Then suddenly the route one is a real threat with his size up front. And he's actually working reasonably well with Morrison for me. Certainly looks a lot more dangerous and direct than, sadly, with Gregory today. Gregory's done a lot of work off the ball, but not anything for me in front of goal, which is his role and purpose in life, isn't it? Bristol fans starting to drift off. 88 minutes. Making for the Bristol bus system to go home, no doubt. Still a few minutes to go. I've never really understood people that leave games early. It's 0-0. Game's still in the balance. Chance of getting a bus seat must be some prize in Bristol. Huge ball over the top towards Fred, if he can take it. He's under pressure on the seven. He can't beat his man there. He lays it back. It's his seven. A cross into the box would be good. This is Fred now on the left-hand side. Fred takes his man on. Somehow finishing up. Shot on goal. Saville! Shot on target. Blocked on the line. There is full-time. 0-0 at Bristol City. A fair result, I think, overall. Huge amount of Lions pressure. Some late excitement in the game. The introduction of Tom Elliott made a big, big difference in terms of danger in front of goal. Morrison's coming down to take the applause of the away fans. A bit of a really average game for Morrison, I think. Stand up last week, McLaughlin I like today. I like Saville in midfield. Up front, Gregory did a lot of work without any great execution. Morrison was Morrison. And a better game in defence for Jordan Archer. So 0-0, second point of the season for the Lions. Still
was finding trouble scoring the goals. But here we are, we're going to close out from Bristol.
You're listening to Achtung Millwall, the number one Mill podcast. Thank you so much for listening.
Achtung, Mehlball.
Huge welcome on the show to our travelling correspondent, Omar Ronayne. Welcome to the show, Omar.
Hi, Nick. How are you, mate?
I'm good, mate, but we were just speaking off air there, and I'm sure the listeners will be agreeing with us. It's starting to get into the kind of groundhog day. Every game, we're playing well, we're doing the right things, but we're still not really getting our rewards as yet. I thought yesterday was a strong performance, but same old, not taking our chances.
Yeah, I can totally agree with that. I think yesterday was, again, another solid away performance. I mean, we got a point on the board, a clean sheet, so try and take positives from that, obviously.
Yep.
But yeah, it's like I said earlier, it's got kind of feel of a broken record at the moment.
2 points from a possible 12, isn't it? It's not... I suppose we should be more concerned if our style of play was looking out of its depth, which, in all honesty, Omar, I don't know where you stand, but I feel we're looking like we are... very much part and parcel of this division. We're not looking out of our depth at all. We've kind of polished the direct style of last season, haven't we? I mean, it's still very much played forward early and hard. Just need a little bit more luck in front of goal, I think. It's just not quite working for us.
Yeah, I mean, whilst I was watching the game yesterday, I was thinking to myself, it's playing out sort of, you've got Bristol City.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult. And that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Trying to pass it around, dominate the ball, as you seem to get for every team in the Championship at the moment. And then obviously you've got ourselves, like, we don't try and play through the middle. We've kind of played the old-fashioned way, so to speak, use our wide areas and seem to be quite effective with it. Obviously, effective means you should be scoring goals at the end of it, but we're creating the chances, and you've got to think it's only a matter of time. I mean, 16 corners I think we had yesterday, well, that sort of stat. So, I mean, it's in the right direction. I think we've polished it sort of, the new signings we've made. I mean, George Savile for me was outstanding again yesterday.
I'd agree with it.
He's a proper midfielder for this level as well. And I think you get the same out of him every single week at the moment. And maybe that's something you might not have got out of him when he was 2 or 3 years ago when he was on loan with us. But he seems to have matured into a really, really good footballer.
I mean, the midfield question is one of the things I wanted to ask you about, because yesterday's midfield has been the same pretty much, barring the League Cup, I think. But it's Williams and Savile. It looks undroppable. I can't see any reason to leave him out. It's going to be interesting once Tunnicliffe is fit. He was on the bench yesterday, didn't see him. I suppose he's going to get a run out midweek in the Carabao Cup or whatever it's called. But Williams at times, I mean, he made errors and mistakes on Tuesday, which released players for goals. He has this languid style, Omar, doesn't he? And I'm just wondering whether Tunnicliffe will be challenging him sooner rather than later for that second midfield spot, because I make you right about Savile, he does look the part.
Yeah, I mean, quite possibly it could be like something to keep Williams on his toes. I think the two together seem to, even though they're both left-footed and kind of play similar styles, they do seem to complement each other and in general seem to do all right in the four games we've had. I mean, if we've created chances and seem to have won most of the battles across the pitch, then we're doing something right in the middle of the park. But I agree with you with Williams. I think there's a couple of times where you're thinking it's like a bit sloppy on the ball, maybe a couple of times yesterday, getting caught out. But I think in general, I think he's played well. And so is Saville, obviously, like I mentioned. So it'll be interesting to see, obviously, with Tunnicliffe. I think he's a bit more direct on the ball and kind of a more kind of Ben Thompson, maybe polished up a little bit more, obviously, for this level. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if he can keep kind of Williams on his toes.
I mean, our style of play is direct, you're right. It also depends on what we used to call a pressing game. Everyone is expected to be tackling and harrying the opposition on the ball from the front backwards. And the only time I feel that we don't look so strong is as soon as that tempo drops. You know, it depends on maximum 100% effort. And there were a couple of moments yesterday, I think I commented on my little live piece early in the second half, where we were just looking a little bit second best at times in midfield early on in the half, though that changed. But as soon as that tempo drops, we can be pulled apart. So the effort is needs to be at the max throughout the whole 90 minutes, doesn't it, from midfield?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's an element of obviously sitting deep and kind of waiting for the team to come onto you. But as soon as they cross that halfway line, you kind of need to just don't let them set into their rhythm sort of thing. And I think a couple of times I agree with you where you do think like Bristol City might be creating something here. But in the end, obviously, we kind of came out the dominant force in the game. But there was a couple of times where you think to yourself, if we give them time to settle and pass it about in the midfield, it could kind of obviously easily be our downfall. But I agree with you to an extent, but maybe we do need that, maybe that more kind of mobile midfielder, maybe to kind of harry the opposition.
Yeah, I mean, the possession stats yesterday sit basically 60-40, 59-41 in favour of Bristol. It was a bit closer, I think, on Tuesday night of the Ipswich. Again, the shot count is quite something, really, isn't it? I mean, 14 shots off target to their 10. Three on target. I mean, at some point, we've got to start to execute this pressure and these chances, which leads me on to the Lee Gregory and Tom Elliott question. I felt, and I'm interested to hear what you felt, but as soon as Elliott came into the game yesterday, which was late, 70-odd minutes, 77 minutes, we started to look a lot more dangerous in front of goal. There was an edge of danger about, wasn't there?
Yeah, I think just even like it's not necessarily how Elliott would come on and perform. It's just bringing on a player like that with 25 minutes to go. He just causes havoc, and it kind of worries the defenders. They're kind of panicking on the ball a bit more, kind of worried what the presence of Elliott can bring. Obviously, in set pieces, he kind of takes care of himself, and obviously he wins pretty much everything in the air.
So he does. Yeah.
Absolutely everything. I mean, he can chest it down as well. I think on Tuesday night, obviously when he came on against Ipswich, he done pretty well as well. Obviously getting a goal. I can see the loyalty. I think, because obviously the main talking point is that it made no changes after conceding four, obviously in midweek. But the loyalty between the Harris has got for Morrison and Gregory, rightly so, after obviously what they've done the last couple of years.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I think if you're Tom Elliott, you're thinking, how much longer do I have to wait before I get my first start in the league?
Well, I mean, this is it. I mean, the start question. I mean, Elliott came in for Gregory, which surprised me slightly. I suppose the obvious substitution would have been for Steve Morrison. But actually, as a front two, Morrison and Elliott, if it can be made to work, that's a fearsome looking front line there, Omer. I mean, both. I mean, you've got the guile and the nous of Steve Morrison. And in all fairness to Elliott, he's not an unskillful player, but he's also got a physicality that would frighten the life out of many defences in that league. It can't be far away that Elliott starts, because Gregory is not taking his chances, sadly.
Definitely. I think what surprised me yesterday was obviously he took Gregory off instead of Morrison, and obviously you'd think maybe it'd be like for like and take Morrison off and put Elliott on, like you mentioned. But I think what was the first thing Elliott done was he kind of went round sort of like a Gregory run and was through on goal kind of on the left-hand side where he's like making a run like a Gregory would. So he has got that, even though he's the target man, so to speak, he is quite, you know, willing to run in behind and obviously cause havoc. And I think you're definitely right. I think if you're Elliott, you're thinking, how much longer do you have to wait to start? And rightly so.
Hit the post late, of course. I missed it in real time. I read afterwards that his header downwards, I thought it had been saved. It had come off the kind of outside skin of the post, which was unlucky. I mean, earlier on, Bristol had also hit the crossbar with a long-range shot. We looked pretty secure. There was no more flapping about in by Jordan Archer in goal. It was a pretty secure game, defensively speaking. I still think I'd like to see Jake Cooper in that defensive line there, Omar. It just brings a certain calmness, which at times we looked a little panicky at moments yesterday. Would you be playing Cooper, mate, or would you keep it as it is?
I think the best defensive display we've had so far was, I think, first game of the season where we had Cooper and Webster. Not Cooper Forrest. And Webster. Cooper and, Cooper and Hutchinson. I think Cooper just kind of brings that bit of balance to the back four because obviously he's naturally left-footed and it kind of plays that way where you have one left-footed centre-half and one right-footed centre-half that kind of just, you know, they kind of carry each other in the games. And I think Cooper obviously brings high advantage as well and a bit of know-how for the league as well for being at Reading previously. I think I personally would have liked to have seen Hutchinson and Cooper, but like I said, I think Harris is kind of being loyal to the players that got us in the situation we're in now and try and get them to play out of it. And yesterday I didn't think it was too bad defensively. I think McLaughlin had a good game at right back as well.
He did, yeah. He stood out for me. Yeah.
He had a tricky winger, I think, that Patterson on the left-hand side and seems to deal well with him. And same with Meredith. So, I mean, it's credit to both Meredith and McLaughlin, new signings coming in, settling in as quickly as they have.
They both look very comfortable players. McLaughlin was my standout yesterday. He made a couple of critical tackles. I think there was one in the first half I remember commenting on, and he just looked the part. It was a quieter game for Meredith, but I do like the look of James Meredith. He's got pace and he's got again know-how for this league. Webster didn't do badly. I mean, it might sound to listeners I'm criticising him, but I don't mean to. I just think that Cooper, it gives you the defensive qualities, Omar, and also even when we're going forwards at set pieces, his height is a threat. And given that we're searching for goals, you know, they've got to start coming from somewhere. I just think Jake Cooper in the box is a slightly more dangerous prospect than perhaps what Byron Webster has been.
Definitely. And I think if you imagine if you had Elliot and Cooper on the pitch at the same time, 16 corners, I think we had 11 in the first half. I mean, it was kind of begging for bringing on a bit of height. And it does beg the question of thinking 16 corners, I don't really... Obviously, you had one, I think, where we hit the post. I don't know if that came from a corner. But you kind of think 16 corners and we didn't really take any advantage from them kind of set pieces.
No, the quality of the crossing was a point of comment for me yesterday because... Too often we weren't beating the first man, and there's been a couple of moments during the course of the season where we're saying the same thing. I think when Ferguson came in, I mean he's a decent cross of the ball. I just think that we just need to start to improve on that because chances will flow once balls are flying around the opposition penalty area. I just thought we fell a little bit short yesterday at times on the wings.
Yeah, definitely, and I think even like I said from set pieces, it was a little bit flat kind of. Creativity wise, I think, but obviously we're asking the players, the same kind of players, to play Tuesday and then Saturday. I don't know how you think about that, but I mean it's just the players did look a little bit kind of, you know, lacking the creativity yesterday towards the end of the game.
Yeah, I mean obviously they're all big games, aren't they? I mean, you know, every game yesterday going down to Bristol City, this is a big stadium, it's a big club, big city. These are, you know, it gives you a, we're not in League One anymore, Omar, are we? These are, every game you're going into it thinking, well, we've got a tough job on here. This is a bit of a must-win situation, or at least not get beaten. And again, now we're looking at Norwich City next week, aren't we, at home? Another decent-sized club. This is the point of being in this bracket, but it asks a lot of questions of players. There's no room for errors and there's no room for passengers at this level.
Yeah, and that's what seems to be the case, obviously, in our first few games, mistakes and conceding goals at the end of it every single time, it seemed. But, I think yesterday was definitely a step in the right direction defensively-wise. I don't think Bristol City created too much, considering the hype. They scored quite a few goals in their first few games, and we kind of kept them quiet. And I think we can take confidence from that. There was a bit of scepticism going into the game, thinking they've got a decent strike force. The striker's worth £5 million. But I think that striker just got agitated towards the end of the game anyway. And I think... we've done a job on them, just obviously we didn't score that goal to win away from home.
They didn't look that dangerous. They didn't look that dangerous for me. There's always a slight sense whenever the team are coming at you from behind the goal, you think you're going to concede, but they didn't look like they were £5 million worth of dangerous, let's put it that way. I think our game improved by the elimination of errors, really. I mean, I know it's probably a pretty of a trite point, but... if you cut the mistakes out, because four goals conceded on Tuesday night, Omar, were all basically from errors by you know, one method or another. Cut the mistakes out, you're gonna keep it tight, aren't you? And that's really the story of the game yesterday for me.
Yeah, and I think even throwing back to when we had Kenny Jackett in charge, we'd be the 1-0 or the 0-0s away from home. But if you just obviously try and play defensively solid and try and take your chances, then you're going in the right direction, obviously. And I think yesterday it was just missing that final quality. And if ironically, we had the final quality on Tuesday, but we conceded four goals. So now it's just trying to find the balance. And I think yesterday we was almost there, just missing that final bit of quality.
Softer words from Neil Harris yesterday. I mean, he really ripped into the team on in the aftermath of Tuesday. I think as he was speaking to the news at Den, he said he spoke in the... I was frustrated. I can't remember how he puts it now, but he certainly spoke in, you know, in anger at avoidable errors on Tuesday night. So, what's your take on Neil? I mean, it's a learning experience for Neil Harris at the moment, isn't it? Every game is a new challenge. I think he's rising to the challenge. I mean, we've not looked in danger of a real thumping so far, have we?
No, and we're not looking out of place in the division either. So it's I think with the signings we've made, like he's brought in some really like technically good players, and they seem to complement the way he obviously wants us to set up and play week in, week out, which is ideal, obviously, as a manager for him to have.
Absolutely.
But I think, yeah, it was interesting that he obviously ripped into the team on Tuesday night, but then kept the same 11 for yesterday, kind of going, well, here's your second chance. And I think you can get cross between loyalty and whether or not, because I think there was a lot of pressure to drop Archer yesterday from a fan's point of view, and obviously he kept Archer in the goal, trying to obviously boost confidence. And the same throughout the rest of the team, conceding four goals midweek, but playing the same 11 on the Saturday, if you need a confidence boost from your manager, you're certainly getting it there.
I mean, it's worth saying, I mean, you were there, I was there yesterday. It was a good reception for Jordan Archer when he came to the Mill End. There was no silly calls, there was no, you know, you don't get none of the arsey comments that you sometimes get from Mill fans at times. He got a good reception, and I was pleased to see that. I think he deserves it.
I think we always have our back iron girl goalkeepers, and I think it's a bit of kind of sense of he helped us obviously get promoted last season. Maybe he was a bit flat compared to the season before, but you can see there is still a good keeper in there potentially, and you need to back one of your own players. And I think yesterday, I think even Archer would probably appreciate the reception he got when he was coming towards the way, and it was definitely, if you need a confidence boost, he certainly got it there.
I always think the travelling support is a bit more hardcore, and it's what I call real Millwall as well, and it was good to see that. I mean, he's got 6.3 on the News at Den's player ratings. I think I'd probably go with that. He wasn't required to do anything outstanding yesterday, but he didn't make any errors and didn't make any mistakes. So a 6 out of 10 for me for Archer yesterday. Would you go with a 6?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, when he was called upon like to try and claim obviously a few balls into the box, he seemed to be solid enough and done what was asked for him and didn't really have much to do saving shots wise. And yeah, it was solid enough for the game.
I mean, the entire defence, Hutchinson, Webster, Meredith and McLaughlin are all on 7.2s on the News at Den. I don't know. There must be some probably a limited number of voters on the for the away games, I guess. But I mean, they all did okay. The defence, I would with a 7. I would probably go more for a 6. Really, they did a job. They didn't really perform out of their skins particularly. McLaughlin would be my standout. I'd be the 7, I suppose, of the group there.
Yeah, I think McLaughlin was definitely, yeah. So I think, like I said, he had a tricky winger he's going up against, and there was a couple of times where he was going down the line and managed to defend it out beautifully, and obviously last-ditch tackles, as you mentioned. So yeah, I'd definitely go with McLaughlin with a 7 and the rest with a 6.
I mean, the midfield, Saville's a star man, 7.9. I would have gone with an 8 for him yesterday. I thought it was a real strong midfield performance. We're starting to expect him out of George Saville now, Omar.
Yeah, and like I said, if he keeps doing them week in, week out, I'm more may it continue. And I think he's my early sharp player of the season. I put on Twitter yesterday after a few beers on the way home. But yeah. I think he is a quality player, and you have to think, I don't think we've spent much on him to get him back here, and he will be worth more times that easily. And I think if you just played week in, week out the way he is now, he'll be a fan favourite for many days to come.
Absolutely. I mean, whatever we're paying for him, it's worth it, because you know, you look at the money that's flying around. You mentioned 5 million for Bristol yesterday. There are plenty of teams spending that kind of money on players that we just don't have the resources to match. But George Saville is an expensive player by Mill standards, but Jesus, he's worth it, Omar. Yesterday's performance was excellent. 7.9 out of 10 for the News at Den audience. Jed Wallace gets a 6.4. Wasn't Jed's greatest though? I thought he was a little bit self-indulgent. There's one run in the second half, he wasted an opportunity. It wasn't Jed at his absolute best yesterday, was it?
Yeah, and I mean, we rely heavily on the players in the wide area, especially Jed Wallace, to create something for us in the game and obviously get us going. Obviously, you get what from Jed Wallace. He's hard effort, working hard, trying to get down the line and put a few balls in the box. But that last bit of quality was just missing yesterday, I think. And I agree with you, the second half when he was playing down the left-hand side, just it was begging to be squared across, but obviously he ran it a bit too far and lost the ball. But yeah, I think for Wallace's point of view, if bit flat compared to what we see from Wallace, but I mean, you still get a certain amount of level of commitment from him, which is what we can ask for.
Oh, quality player. I mean, there was one run across the middle. He seemed to be on the ball for at least 4 or 5 seconds too long. He's made a run across the middle, and I commented that it's a fantastic run. He is a quality turn. And again, as with Savile, he's a higher level player than we've been used to in recent years. Sean Williams continues to frustrate. He gets 6.4 on the news at Den. It's probably about right, I suppose, for me, Omar, yesterday, would you say?
Yeah, like we touched on earlier, a bit kind of not like the complete Sean Williams we'd get from him on an ideal game from him. I think it would be interesting, like Ben Thompson's waiting patiently. I don't think he even made the bench yesterday. And like, no, I said, we didn't. So it's going to be, it's an interesting talking point. Like, if obviously on Tuesday we're expecting changes when we go to Reading. And so who's going to come in from the midfield if one of them was injured, for example? I mean, it's quite interesting, like the midfield kind of options Harris has got at the moment.
No Thompson. I don't remember. Correct me if I'm wrong, or listeners will certainly. I don't remember Romeo being on the bench either, Marlon.
No.
So this is the squeeze, isn't it? This is the we've got good young promising players there, both of whom we've been expecting to, well, they were starters last season, but not even on the bench, not even in with a sniff at this level. Such is the championship, I suppose. Frustrating player for I don't know how many times we've said this. Aidan O'Brien, he wasn't his best game yesterday. He was a little bit anonymous, didn't really notice him very much yesterday.
Yeah, and so you're kind of, it was one of those games where you're hoping he just pops up with a goal and you're going, well, yeah, there you go, that's why Aidan's on the pitch, sort of thing. And I think that's what you're looking for from Aidan. Like, you're not looking for him to kind of be the main outlet to create anything or like try and like be the one to grab the game by the scruff of the neck. You're just hoping he's in the right place at the right time to bury a chance. But yesterday, a bit flat compared to what we'd look for Aidan, obviously. But you can see why he's playing. But yeah, it was definitely a bit frustrating for him yesterday.
Well, he's getting 5.6 on, which is under the six out of 10 mark for Aidan. I suppose if he'd have scored a goal, Omar, then that 5.6 would have gone up to a 6.67, because that's the kind of player is he. You know, some might call that a luxury player. I'm not sure we have room in a high tempo midfield for a player that is, you know, that kind of comes and goes. But certainly he's a goal scorer, and I can't argue with that. If he'd have got a goal yesterday, his rating would have been higher, almost certainly. There we are, Aidan O'Brien. He'll you know, we miss him when he's not there, and when he is there, we curse him, don't we?
Exactly.
Up front, Lee Gregory. I didn't think Greg did a lot of work off the ball. I commented in my live section, and I want to get your take, Omar. He's putting a lot of physical work on into this team. I know he's there to score goals, but you can't fault the man's effort and work rate. He puts himself about a lot for me.
Yeah, he's a crucial outlet, I think, especially when if you're playing against teams that like to keep the ball and obviously try and pass about. You're looking for your forwards to kind of, obviously, when the ball's played up, put the players, the defence under pressure and try and get hold of the game and win some free kicks. And you get that from Gregory week in, week out, and you not doubt his commitment to it, obviously. And I think just yesterday we didn't really create any chances for him to kind of get that chance. And there was a couple of times in the goal, in the box, yeah, there's like a little bit of a scramble and you're thinking, come on, just squeeze through, please. Just squeeze through and get in the back of the net. But I think with Gregory, you'd hope it's only a matter of time. Obviously, League One, he's proved that he can do it for us week in, week out and score goals. You're thinking Championship now, you're not going to get as many chances a game. When they come, is he going to be the one that's going to take them consistently for us?
But there it is. It's that, isn't it? I'm the same. I'm sitting right behind a goal yesterday. And you just wanted that fraction. You know, it's not even a split second longer than he was going to get. You don't get that in the Championship, and he's going to have to find it. He's going to have to find something soon, because I think his position as a starter is under pressure from the big man, from Tom Elliott. I think the case not to start Elliott with the absence of goals, I mean, I know we've got three on Tuesday night, but overall we're not scoring goals enough. The case to start the big man is going to become ever louder, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's just, you're looking for your forwards to step up and score, and Morris and Gregory both on zero goals at the moment, and you just have to think, like, when are they going to try and step up, and like, when are they going to score the goals for us? And with Elliott coming on and scoring on Tuesday, there's certainly a lot of pressure on both of them at the moment.
Lee Gregory gets 6.3. Morrison, I didn't think it was Morrison's best game yesterday. I mean, he's being squeezed. I mean, the ball's being put towards him, and he's got two defenders, one behind him, one in front of him. It's a hard It's a hard job to ask him. I think he's better employed, as in the old days. You're too young to remember Teddy in Sheringham in our side, but Teddy made a career of pulling wide, not playing the obvious big man role. And I'm just wondering whether, with Elliot starting doing that hard grinding kind of attritional stuff, it might release Morrison to do what he does best, which is get down the flanks and pull wider.
Yeah, and I think Morrison, he's just missing that little bit of yard of pace that he once had, you think. And it's like when he's against a tall centre-half, he really has no chance of winning any headers. I think on Tuesday against Ipswich, against smaller centre-halves, he had a great game on Tuesday by all counts. And I think it's kind of, you kind of have to judge it based on who we're playing against. And I think with Baker and Wright at the back for Bristol City yesterday, both of them were winning headers for days and just making it easy, really. And when Elliot came on, it was a totally different ball game. So it does kind of think, if it's Morrison and Elliot up front, or if it's Gregory and Elliot up front, there's definitely a place for Elliot to come in, and we keep talking about it.
we do, and there's also Fred. I mean, Fred for me is not a winger. He does best when he's in the penalty area, and he's persistent on the ball. He'll give you a maximum effort, and he's certainly got something. I'm just not sure he's best played out wide. So begs the question of an Elliot and Onya Dimmer front too, doesn't it?
Yeah, and so I think if Fred, obviously, he's buying his time, but I think he will probably get the opportunities to impress. Obviously, Tuesday, we've got the cup game, and I think with Fred, you're looking for him to make that impact from the bench, and he certainly does that when he's getting the ball. You can tell that the defenders are thinking twice about going in on a tackle on him because he's trying to take him on and go past him. But you are thinking, if you're playing through the middle, are we going to get a different kind of return from Fred?
Yeah. And also Shane Ferguson, he only had 10 minutes, so I thought he did okay. His crossing speaks for itself. So yeah, overall, strong away performance, a point gained, I suppose you've got to say. I thought it was probably a fair result in the end, 0-0. I didn't feel shortchanged by the result at the end of the day, Omer.
Yeah, I think, like I said, we didn't quite create that clear-cut opportunity to say we should have took all 3 points. But at the same time, if anyone was going to win that game yesterday, I felt like it was going to be us. But like I said, I think a point on the board, a clean sheet away from home, lots of positives to take. Just hopefully we start scoring goals away from home as well.
Last league game before an international break, I think, isn't it? Home to Norwich. Keep saying that they're all big games. That's going to be a big game as well. They bring a fair travelling support with them, Norwich City. And we really are looking for our first win of the season. I think it'll be a monkey off our back the moment we get it.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be, obviously, like I said, good travelling. I think we'll be good atmosphere from our side as well. It's going to be a different test as well with Norwich. They've got that German kind of mentality at the moment with the new manager they've got in from Borussia Dortmund. Everyone's trying to copy it, obviously, that sort of kind of layout. So they'll be pressing us and trying to force us to make mistakes. So it'll be interesting to see how we cope, because this is the game on Saturday is kind of something that I think we'd get every week in the Championship as well, which we haven't so far. We've kind of proved and stood up to the test. But Norwich will be a different kind of outlet, and it'll be interesting to see how it goes.
Absolutely. So if you're listening and you're not doing anything Saturday, get yourself down the den. Crying out loud, get down the den. That's fantastic stuff, Omer. Our travelling correspondent, always good to talk to you, mate.
Really, as always.
Really appreciate your Sunday morning taking time out. Not a problem. We'll catch you in September, no doubt, at some stage.
No problem. Thanks for your time.
All the best, Omer. Thank you, mate.
Cheers, pal.
Achtung, Mehlball. Huge welcome on the show to a name from Millwall's past. Older listeners will remember Stephen Constantine, now Indian national team manager. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
Nice to be on the show. Thanks for inviting me. And firstly, good luck to all the Millwall fans and obviously the team for the season.
Thank you very much. Yes, I think we're going to need all the luck we've got. We've risen a level. Now, the last time that you were at the Den was possibly one of the most chaotic seasons I've ever known as a Millwall fan. And I wanted to touch on that, but also you've got we're just speaking off air, Stephen, and I think it's an exotic career you've got. It's fascinating to read. I'm just looking at your Wikipedia page, and you've been everywhere, and you've been to some places that most of us never dream of.
Not all exotic either.
Well, I suppose Millwall's an exotic location by some people's definition. I don't know.
Well, compared to some of the places, yeah.
Now, you're a London lad. You're born in London. And your family, I believe, if you correct me, are from the Greek part of Cyprus originally. You came to London. And you got into
I was born in London. My mother's English. Okay. My father's So I didn't end up going to Cyprus till I was about 8 years old.
Right. Okay. Well, so, yeah. Thank you for that. And you came to the Den via two locations that, again, are unusual, I suppose. Nepal, you're a Nepalese team manager, and then you went on to India for the first spell in the early 2000s. I'm just curious, I mean, how did you get into management and how did you get to go to such unusual locations as your starting point? It's an unusual route into the game, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I don't know if that's a segue into the book.
Well, that's what we're trying to shift Stephen's book, listeners. we're trying to help him out here. So, yeah, it's a segue into the book. You've got a book out from Delhi to the Den. It's on Amazon. You can buy it on Amazon. We'll come back to that later. But get it in.
Well, the reason I say that is because that is a massive question in terms of how did I get to Nepal? I was in Cyprus coaching. I started my career in the US. Had trials at Millwall as a kid.
Did you?
Played at the proper old Den.
Coldblow Lane.
Where they could reach through the railings and pull you back from the corner. not to mention the odd gob or two. I had trials there when I was a kid.
Right.
I actually played for the under 16s, I think it was, against I was on the bench for Crystal Palace.
Right.
I played a half against Fulham.
Wow.
As a goalkeeper, by the way.
As a goalkeeper, because you did you not progress to out the outfield play, or have I got that wrong?
No. I was playing Sunday football over Hackney Marshes, and one of our keepers broke his finger. They stuck me in goal for 6 weeks, and right. In that 6 weeks, I must have done something right because I got a call to go down to Millwall for a trial
as a goalkeeper. Wow.
Yeah. It was. I remember down at the old Den that after we finished the game, there were four keepers and we had a half each. I must have done all right because they told me to stay behind, and they had 10 kids out who were also in the trial, yeah, smashing shots at me, and one of them was Don Massey.
Right. Wow. Okay. Yeah.
I think he had just signed his pro contract, if I'm not mistaken, at that time, and he was there.
Right.
I played the game against Fulham. I let in two, and basically I wasn't good enough.
And that was that.
So they
let you go, basically. I guess it's a tough world in that way, isn't it? Football.
Well, yeah. So we as a family, we moved in 1970 to Cyprus. And then obviously there was the invasion in 1974.
Yes.
And I came back, and to make the story quite short, I ended up going to the States. I played a little bit over there. I guess you could call it professional. I had a contract, and I trained every day.
Yeah.
But I snapped my ligament when I was 28.
Wow.
But I had always wanted to do coaching as a young 20, 21 year old in Pennsylvania. They would make us go and do these coaching sessions with these camps they used to have in the States back then.
Yeah.
And we were mucking about with these 7-8 year olds and getting them to pass the ball and to turn and using different techniques to turn with the ball and dribbling and stuff like that. And I thought it was brilliant getting these kids to do something that I thought was quite easy and fun. And maybe that's subconsciously where I got the bug to coach. So. Yeah.
I mean, I read a piece just leading into our call today. It's an old When Saturday Comes article, which they describe you as football's most qualified coach. I'm guessing that this bug and the desire to progress as a coach inspired you to take the many different qualifications that are available, the FIFA qualifications, the whole range, I'm guessing.
Well, I think you've got to stay current. You've got to keep up to date. The game is a moving game by nature. And I think educationally, we should always be trying to improve ourselves to get better. And, I've done as many courses as I can that I feel will help me improve the players. And I will continue to do that. I don't know if I'm the highest qualified coach in the world, whatever that means. But
it made a nice line in the article. I thought I'd mention it just because it just stuck in my, you know, stuck in my mind as I saw it. So from the US to Nepal, Stephen, that's quite a journey, isn't it?
Well, it was from the US to Cyprus. I went back to Cyprus.
Right.
I spent 7 years coaching there, second division, third division, fourth division. I had a spell in the first division there at that point. And then I wasn't getting looking.
Mm.
And through the English FA, I had applied for a program that they were doing to help the Asian Confederation.
Yeah.
That's how I got the Nepal job. So.
Okay. That must have been a culture shock for you to go to a place like that. It must be a very different, football's football wherever you go, I know, but I would imagine that football in Nepal must be a different ball game entirely, for want of a better way to put it.
Yeah, but you know, they love their football in Nepal.
Do they?
yeah, I mean, we actually, there was one situation where I have to tell you, it was my first day. I had arrived, I left the States, went to England, spent about 6 hours in England, yeah, with my wife and daughter, and then got on another plane to go to the other side of the world, to Kathmandu.
Kathmandu, yes, that's right. Yeah.
And my first day, they wake me up at the crack of dawn, by the way, so I had about 5 hours sleep. Coach, we have training. What? I've just got here. No, but you have to come, coach. So they take me down to this university, and I would call it a pitch.
Is this in the loosest sense of the term, Stephen?
As loose as it gets. There were no lines on the pitch. There were no nets. True, there were two goalposts in the middle of this field. It was monsoon season.
Right, okay, yeah.
If you know what monsoon season means in Nepal, it means it was absolutely chucking it down.
Right. So conditions were heavy.
Yeah. I was up to my ankles in mud, and there were about 35 of these Nepali players, all wearing different color uniforms, but no Millwall shirt, surprisingly.
No, I don't think we reached that far, sadly, but there we are.
And then the president of the association, he comes walking across the pitch in a cream-coloured suit. I kid not.
How did he keep the mud off of it? That's what's fascinating. It sounds like a car park rather than a football pitch.
No, there was grass on it. There was grass on it.
Fascinating.
It was really cloudy, so there was this drizzle coming down. Now, we had these dragonflies that were the size of your finger.
Right.
And as thick as your finger, and they were like little miniature helicopters, and they were buzzing around. And this the president, Mr. Ganesh Thapa, is now trying to introduce me to these these 35 players. They could have been 35 years old, by the way. And I'm looking over their heads out towards the Himalayas, and you can just about see the peaks and the cloudies. Wow. It was cloudy, and I'm thinking, oh my God, where am I? and it was two of the best years of my life.
Fascinating stuff. And then 2 years there, and you cross those Himalayas and go to India national team coach for the first time. India is a fascinating country in many respects. I mean, clearly cricket dominates the national psychology to an extent that I think is sometimes hard for us in England to truly comprehend. But there is a tradition of football there, Stephen, isn't there? It's more than we might imagine in the UK.
Well, you know, Mohunbagan and East Bengal are two of the oldest clubs in the world.
Yeah.
Obviously that tradition was started by us.
Yeah,
When we went over there and we were in India for
200 odd years, basically, yeah,
several centuries.
Yeah.
So they got both of those bugs from us. But look, the football has really kicked on in the last few years. Obviously, the national team doing really well is
under your management.
Yeah. Thanks for that. We really have done very well, and that includes everybody with me. The staff have been absolutely fantastic, but it's changing. More people are starting to look at football now, and I think it's very, very quickly catching cricket up, so hopefully that changes.
Well, I was going to ask you just briefly. I mean, obviously the game in India doesn't get much coverage here, but doing a little bit of research, there is an Indian, it's like an IPL for football, a Super League, I believe they're calling it there. Do you see that as a means of for the game to really take off? Is it can it do for football what it's clearly done for cricket, and that's, you know, enliven it, electrify it in some respects? Money clearly is going to be the key to it, and homegrown talent, I guess.
Well, that's absolutely right. The Indian Super League is was up until recently a 3-month league.
Right.
So what would happen is the I-League, which is the official FIFA recognized league, would play and end, and then they would start the 3-month league. And obviously that needed to change. They had different set of rules, so it wasn't really considered a league. It was just a 3-month tournament with 8 teams.
Right.
This year that has changed. It will start in November and it will end the end of April. So, and both of the leagues will run at the same time.
Okay.
So which is great for Indian players, because that means more Indian players will be playing. And the Indian Super League had 6 players, 6 foreigners and 5 Indians. Now it will be 6 Indians and 5 foreigners. And the plan is hopefully next year that they come together and there is one league with the permitted 4 maximum number of foreigners again. And that obviously helps the development for Indian players. But sure. Yes, in short, the Indian Super League has really raised the awareness for football in India and all over the world. The coverage has been spectacular. It just needed to be less showy and more football. And that is actually starting to happen. So if it can do half of what it did for the Indian Cricket League, then it's going to be a very good thing.
Well, India's described as a sleeping giant in football terms, and I agree with that. I mean, you're clearly making progress, Steve, and as you know, you've come into the top 100 nations in the FIFA rankings. I think that some way down the list previously, and you've got I've got 3 wins on the spin. Is it this? How many wins on the go now? As a national team in the qualifying tournament?
Well, we've got 2 wins in qualifiers, but we are 8 wins in a row.
8 wins in a row.
Internationally, we've won 13 out of the last 15.
Fantastic. Well, I wish you well on that front, mate. So we're going from success, but we're going to revert back now to the chaotic season, which was very far from success, which there is a chapter in your book about your season at Millwall's first team coach. And I remember this season like it was just yesterday. It's actually 11 years ago now, which is how time flies. The most chaotic season I've ever known at the Den. It must have seemed like, you've been to some places already, and then you've pitched into the kind of madhouse that was Zampa Road for 2005 and 2006. That it must have been quite a character building experience, Stephen.
It really was. I can't tell you. It was a dream come true.
Yeah.
It was a dream come true to be in England, back in England working. And obviously, I've always had a soft spot for Millwall because of my my little spell there. I can say I played for Millwall for 5 minutes. But, it really was. It was horrific in many ways. And I don't know. I mean, for me, it came about. I applied to be the manager. I got a call from Jeff Burnaby. Basically said it's between you and Steve Claridge, and I thought, well, that's that then. and it was that.
Well, you could, at least you escaped Steve's fate. He was manager for 1 month only, Stephen, so it could have been worse, mate, couldn't it?
Then Colin Leagher stepped in, and I was somebody rang me up from Millwall asking if I'd be interested in being the first team coach. When I said, yeah, I would, they gave my CV to Colin Lee and I went up there. I met him for about 5 hours at Bromley.
Right.
It was, we got Preston North End on Saturday. Come in, watch from upstairs. And then bring your observations on Monday, and we'll go from there.
I mean, it was a chaotic season, Stephen. I mean, you know, obviously from the top downwards, there was turmoil, chairman upon chairman, and you know, manager upon manager as the season went along. You forget these things. I was just looking at the you know, the season's records. There's over 40 odd players used in the squad over the course of that one season. You can never have success with that amount of turmoil going on around you, can you? It's almost it's almost suicidal in that sense.
Yeah, you're right, but you know what? I still believe we shouldn't have gone down. I still think we had the players there to keep us up, and we needed help up front.
Yeah.
Desperately, and we didn't get that. And in the transfer window, when we had identified a couple of players, either it was not done, or by the time we got to it, the boy had left and gone to another club. Or It was really it was very sad, and it was very difficult as well. Obviously, the atmosphere was not great. That was within the club.
Must have been stressful on yourself and those that managed around you as well. I mean, we sit in the stands, and obviously we're there fortnightly or whatever the case may be. And the fans have the right to express their opinion, but it must be a hard thing to listen to, because I can well imagine the kinds of comments that would have rained down on the home bench as these games got away from us.
Do you know, shall I tell you honestly, I never had a bad word directed toward me.
You're lucky.
I mean that. People seem to appreciate that. I was trying to help as much as I can. I didn't make the decisions.
Would I have done
things differently? Absolutely. But it's easy for me to say that in hindsight. You know, that there are a lot of things that should not have happened that happened. And you know, it's it was really unfortunate that we ended up going down.
It's interesting. I'm just looking at the players over the course of the season, and you're right. There's some decent players in that team there, Stephen. I mean, you know, I'm looking at David Livermore. There's Zach Whitbread, Paul Robinson, fine Millwall servants. You know, Marvin Elliott was a great midfield player. Marvin Williams, a good striker. So it wasn't
Barry Hales up there.
Hales, a fine old pro. I mean, it wasn't that we were short of ammunition. It was just almost the. At times, it seemed like the gods were against us. It was a strange season. And you're right, management sets the tone. But, you know, it was the most frustrating season I think I've ever known in my life. I was just looking at the Amazon. We'll mention the book again, From Delhi to the Den, which is available on Amazon. And there's a chapter on that Millwall season in there, Stephen. There's one thing that intrigued me. You mentioned a chairman throwing £10,000 on the... on the dressing room floor. Can you elucidate on that in any way?
it was the cup game against Everton.
Right. Yes.
This was the I think he, De Savery, Peter De Savery, I think his name was.
Oh yeah, I remember him well.
Yeah. So now you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know that it's true. He was trying to motivate the players, and he came in and said that he would give us a bonus, and here it is. And he tipped the money out of a brown paper bag and onto the floor, and the players really just looked at it. And you know, some of them were on 8 or 9 grand a week.
Yeah.
So 10 grand divided by... I don't know, 20 odd players. it wasn't really going to do it. Had it been 100,000, it might
have impressed. It's still crass, isn't it? I mean, I can't believe players are motivated by that.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. But you know, I remember when we had the League Cup game against Birmingham.
Yeah.
Was it Birmingham?
I'm just looking. I'm just looking. Carling Cup. We got. We had Birmingham. Yeah, yeah. 2-2 draw.
That's right. And we lost on penalties.
Yeah.
And if we'd have won that, we'd have been going to the Bahamas for the weekend on the chairman. but Barry Ells and Big Ben missed the penalties, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Ben May. Yeah.
Yeah.
There we are. These are the characters. You must have come across some characters in your time in the game, but that's one angle. So the chaotic season of Millwall comes and goes. Then you're on to places like Malawi, Sudan, and then back to Cyprus and then Rwanda.
That was.
And these must be experiences. I mean, I can't even think of how I'd deal with travelling and working in such places. It must be both interesting and stressful at times.
Yes, yeah, stressful. I don't know. I mean, it is. It can be very stressful, but it's part of the job. I mean, traveling now. I've been traveling for so long. I don't even know where my home is.
it's Coldblow Lane, Steve.
No, I did go up to the game. I saw the lads play the other day against Grenada.
Oh, did you? Yeah. For the friendly. Yeah.
And it was weird. You know what? It was. I took my youngest daughter, who's 12, who'd never been to a football game.
Right.
And I said to my wife, "I'm taking the little one up to Millwall, shouldn't you?"
That really goes down well. It's never the line to you, Steve. I'm taking my young daughter to the den. It never works out, mate.
She's come back singing, "No one likes us and we don't care."
You got more chance. I'm going to take my youngest to Rwanda. Yeah. Oh dear. Well, I mean, it's wonderful to know that the club makes such an impact, because obviously we live in a bit of a bubble at the Den, and it's both our great strength and sometimes it's our great weakness too. But it's always interesting to hear people that have come, you know, through the club to the club, and how much of an impact it makes. It does have a certain something about it, doesn't it, Millwall Football Club?
Well, it does. It was the first trial I ever had.
Yeah.
Okay. It was the first coaching job I ever had, you know, it was a bad year, but I had the experience of a lifetime being there. I'm still in touch with Livers.
Yeah.
In fact, he's on the cover of the book.
He is. I saw that. Yeah, it's a graphic on the front there. Yeah.
And one of the reasons for me going to the game was to give him a copy of the book, and I also gave the gaffer, Neil Harrison, a copy as well.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, and you know what? I was standing outside the game afterwards, and three or four people came up to me that, you know, they knew who I was from my
time. From the old days,
And that was really, really, it was really nice. So good to go back.
That's fantastic, Stephen. It's wonderful to talk to you. Please stay in touch. Please stay in touch. It's lovely to hear these old memories of the club. I want to wish yourself and the Indian team well. I see you've got forthcoming games against. These are World Cup games, I believe, aren't they? Mauritius.
The Mauritius and
Tri Nation series. Sorry,
That's a precursor to the qualifier we have in Macau on September the 5th. It's a big game for us. We are one step away from the Asian Cup, which is the equivalent to the Euros. So we get a good result there. We got them again at home. We could be qualified by November, hopefully.
Well, I want to wish you well. I know that it's always been your dream to come back to England and make it here, but it sounds like you're doing your own thing, and sometimes that's the cards that life deals us. And that, I think it's a wonderful CV, it's a wonderful looking book, and a fantastic story. So, Stephen Constantine, thank you very much for coming on Achtung Millwall.
Thank you very much, Nick. I appreciate it, and good luck for the season.
You've been listening to Achtung Millwall, the CBL Magazine podcast. That's the Millwall news this week, and we are out of here.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.